From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, August the 11th, 2009. Every week, Directions Media brings you the most current news and informed opinions on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Today, we'll try to grasp the somewhat nebulous topic of cloud computing and what it means to the geospatial information technology sector. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Improve the performance of your web maps and make your authoritative data more broadly available with ArcGIS 931. For more information, visit www.esri.com/what's new.
Over the past many years, I'm sure many of you have no doubt sat in on a presentation where the Internet was represented by the graphic depiction of the cloud. We're going to tackle geospatial cloud computing, some of the basics of general cloud computing, and see where that's going to take us in the coming years. I'm going to start with a definition, and it's brought by a group called the Burton Group. It's a market research company that issued a report called Cloud Computing, Transforming IT, and they have the most succinct definition, I think, and so that's where we're going to start today. Their definition is, and I quote, "the set of disciplines, technologies, and business models used to render IT capabilities as on-demand services." And that really puts it very succinctly. I think that's exactly what I may think many of you perhaps think of as cloud computing. But let me drill down a little bit more, because the what they list as components of cloud computing, I think, probably puts it in the proper perspective. And I'm going to go through these very briefly. The first one is shared infrastructure. And what that means is it's a part of doing business. Cloud providers invest in and build the infrastructure necessary to offer software and platforms. That's just things like servers and whatnot. The next one is on-demand self-service. Well, what this means is the cloud customer's ability to purchase and use cloud services as the need arises, and that's what you would typically think of when you say on-demand. I want a service, I want to get it, and it's there. You don't have to install software and whatever. The next one is elastic and scalable, and this gets to be maybe my core fundamental principles of cloud computing, which is, from a consumer's point of view, cloud computing's ability to quickly provision or deprovision IT services creates an elastic, scalable IT resource. In other words, you're expanding the amount of resources as you need them. If you need more disk space, they have it available to you. The next one, consumption-based pricing model. I think this one also gets to some of the core issues. And the Burton Group says that providers charge the consumer per amount of service consumed. And the last one is dynamic and virtualized, and this last component is defined as the need to leverage the infrastructure across as many consumers as possible, typically drives cloud vendors to create a more agile and efficient infrastructure. So those are the properties of cloud computing. Can you get to them a little bit finer? What is it about this platform that you think is relevant here? Is this anything different?
Well, and that's exactly it. Those properties that you just detailed are what make this computing platform different than everything that came before. And if we think back in the history of computing, once upon a time there was a mainframe, and then there was a mini, and then there was the desktop computer, and now we're moving to laptops and handhelds and phones, right? So the platform is changing. This is, in a sense, just another platform, but it has all those special properties that you just defined. And they really make for a fundamentally different platform on which you can deploy. And where it gets really interesting, and I think maybe the best way to start thinking about this whole cloud situation from a geospatial point of view, is what kinds of things can you do on this platform? What can you offer as a cloud computing vendor? And what can you buy as a cloud computer user? So what I want to do is, first, let's talk about what the vendors can sell if they are, in fact, implementing cloud computing. And let's start at the bottom of the stack. The first thing they can sell is the equivalent of that mainframe, mini, desktop, laptop. They can sell you, basically, a computer that you can use that you're not sitting in front of. It's sitting somewhere else. And that's referred to as providing infrastructure as a service. And basically what you can do is you can detail exactly how much RAM you want and how much storage and what kind of operating system, and you pay a little money, and that's what they give you. And that's the kind of business that Amazon offers, that kind of thing, so do other providers. So you can basically, the one thing they can sell is they can basically sell you a computer. So with infrastructure as a service, you have access to this computer out there in the cloud, and you can do whatever you want with it. You can store things on it. You can put applications on it. You can do whatever you like. It's not so different than buying a computer that you have in front of you. It's just that it's somewhere else, and you're going to access it over the Internet. Now, let's take a step up and move on to what is referred to as platform as a service. And to keep that straight in my head, I like to think of it as development platform as a service. And that's where not only is there a machine out there that you have access to, but that machine has on it special kinds of tools so that you can build software applications. And this is where something like the Google App Engine lives, or Microsoft's Azure lives. Those are really platforms for software developers to build applications that they will then deploy. Now, the tricky part about it is, if you choose to build your apps on the Google App Engine, you've got to have, they'll only run on that Google App Engine. If you choose to write applications on Windows Azure, they will only run on Windows Azure. So you got to pick the one you want, but that's the kind of thing that somebody who wanted to develop applications would buy from a cloud services provider. Now, let's move up the stack one more step to what's referred to as software as a service. And that's where cloud vendors provide actual software tools that you as an end user can use. And those are things that maybe you're most familiar with, things like Gmail or Flickr, things where you as an end user can just start using stuff. You don't really need to know what's going on in the back end there. And you, in those particular cases, you don't have to pay, but in other situations, like with Salesforce.com, you actually do pay a fee to use that service. And that brings up that whole elasticity thing, so that if in your company you have 5 salespeople and you hire 5 more, you can get 5 more accounts by literally having a credit card.
Right. And then,
it's really on demand.
Right. And then the advantage there is you can share all the analytics that come with Salesforce.com, let the whole group insert their sales projections, and then everybody can see what everybody else is doing and do a little analysis.
So what I want to do now is start to look at what some of the geospatial software and data providers are starting to do with these different offerings, with infrastructure as a service, with platform as a service, and with software as a service. So let's again start at the bottom, and we'll start with the infrastructure as a service. At the ESRI User Conference, I had the chance to speak to Deke Young, who is the Director of Business Systems at GeoEye. And he told me a story about how GeoEye had planned to take a snapshot from its satellite of President Obama's inauguration. And what they did was, once the image was taken, they wanted to provide it on their website for people to download, which is what they did. And a lot of people were very excited about pulling down this image, which was about 3 megabytes. So the pipe that delivers data from GeoEye out to the Internet started to get pretty full. And the way he told it, although he was sort of kidding, was with 10 minutes and a credit card, he was able to, instead of storing that image locally on GeoEye's servers, he instead moved it up to Amazon's S3, the storage part of Amazon's cloud offering, Amazon Web Services, and they stored it up on Amazon's server. And that cut down the demand on the GeoEye pipe, and it let everybody who wanted to gain access to that image. And since then, what GeoEye has done is now all of the images that it provides as samples live up on Amazon servers, not on its own. So that's using a very, if you'd like, low-level use of cloud computing, but it's very effective for the problem that they needed to solve. If we move up the stack one more and we start to talk about a cloud solution that is a platform for development, things get a little bit more interesting. And this is just starting to be offered, and I sort of got the hints about this at the ESRI User Conference from Scott Morehouse and Dirk Gorder, who talked about ESRI's use of the cloud and planned use of the cloud. And one of the places that they did want to participate was in this platform-based. And what was starting to be hinted at was that ArcGIS Online will become more of a platform on which developers can build and host applications. So that's one way to think about a platform. Safe Software is also talking about the same kind of thing. If they can take their feature manipulation engine and put it up in the cloud in that scalable space, so it almost didn't matter how big the data was that you needed crunched or how many servers you needed to do the crunching, it might be a great place to do that kind of work. So in a platform situation, you have not only the hardware and the operating system, but you have some tools to use to build applications. Now, as you move up the stack one more to software as a service, where there's sort of already built software solutions that end users or companies can use, the best example there is a company called WeoGeo, and we've talked about WeoGeo before. We have a podcast with Paul Bissett, the CEO, in a podcast that we did last year. And what's interesting about WeoGeo is it was actually born in the cloud. And I say that because one of the parts of the vision for the company was a marketplace where you could buy and sell geospatial data, data that you had that you wanted to make money off of or get access to data in exactly the form that you needed it. And the only way that that was even going to be possible was if it was already in the internet. It was expandable so that if there's lots and lots of data, it could handle it. If there was lots and lots of demand for transforming the data, say changing the coordinate system, changing the format, then that power would be there. So WeoGeo is actually born in the cloud, and that application is already available for use. Now, these are just some early examples. This whole idea of the cloud is still very new, and people are sort of dipping toes in it because it's new, and we have to be a little bit careful. Now, what kinds of things are making people nervous about using the cloud, Joe?
Well, I think one of them somewhat is security. Is my data secure? If I upload all of my content information up to a server that's hosted by someone else, is it going to be secure? I think that's one of the issues. One of them, and another one is the business model. How am I going to purchase these services? There's probably so little out there other than buying gigabytes by the chunk that, at least in the geospatial realm, I'm not sure how we would price these. And I think that is what WeoGeo is trying to do, is lead by example, and certainly GeoEye, and I know that Digital Globe is working on this as well, is how do you price storage of data or take data down in a certain amount of chunks. So number one is security, and number two is how am I going to buy this? I think those are the two fundamental issues that need to be addressed.
But it's the Amazons and the IBMs and the Googles that are going to determine the how it's sold, certainly at the infrastructure level.
Right, right. And we're already seeing, as you had mentioned, the Amazon S3 and EC2 models, that those are becoming at least acceptable platform on which to at least examine how other people are offering services. I think from the geospatial side, I've heard a number of CEOs all of a sudden come up and say, we have to move our software to the cloud. And I've heard this from Halsey Wise at Intergraph and from Mike Hickey at Pitney Bowes Business Insight. Everybody is saying move to the cloud. I'm not sure I see this being delivered by the cloud, but I think you've observed what ESRI is trying to do, and maybe we should talk about some of the things they're doing about ArcGIS Online.
Right. Well, ArcGIS Online, in addition to, as I suggested, it being a platform for development, also offers software as a service. And the first one that ESRI is talking about quite a bit is the tools on ArcGIS Online to allow users to share their data, either with small groups or with the entire web, in the form of layer packages. And that's sort of a first toe in the water. Another toe in the water is Business Analyst Online, which is basically taking that piece of software that used to be a box with some data that you would buy and making that available as a service in the cloud. Now, right now, everybody who went to the ESRI user conference got an email just in the past couple of weeks with a 30-day free trial of Business Analyst Online. And I think it's worth going to play with that to start thinking about what kinds of other things might exist in the cloud in that same sort of fashion. What kinds of things might ESRI offer? What kinds of things might your business want to offer in that same kind of model? And in this case, build off of ESRI's platform.
And so what I think you're saying is that using ESRI or maybe GOI as an example, and I think the goal for cloud computing in general is I will buy a service from vendor A. I might buy data from vendor B. I might store my information on cloud vendor C. Is that the way you see this playing out? Is that I'm going to buy services as I need them on a per-drink basis, for example?
I think that's something that the vendors have to, and the users have to look at. And one of the things that we need to do is sort of run the numbers. Is it more cost-effective to do it this way than whatever way we're doing it now? Is it cheaper, for example, to access Business Analyst Online if I only need to run reports every once or twice a month versus buying a package that I own and I have to maintain and get updated data for and so forth? How does that play out from a monetary standpoint?
I want to interject one of the comments and from that Burton Group report, and they say that, and I quote, market forces such as the economy, price, and availability of power and space, increasing personnel costs and IT complexity and maintenance have driven IT organizations to realize a central truth: they cannot afford to manage at all. And I think that's an interesting comment because, again, given the current economic situation, they're looking to outsource as many services as possible. And that's where we find ourselves. This is just a reality of the enterprise computing environment that we find today.
And I think it's also important to think through the fact that while you yourself may not be a direct end user of an infrastructure cloud solution, if ESRI is offering a platform kind of solution, it's probably renting some servers and some storage space from someone. And then it's, in a sense, adding value to it by providing a development platform. And if they offer you a solution like Business Analyst Online, they're, in a sense, adding value to that. So there's sort of a stack here, and the providers like the Intergraphs and the MapInfos have to think about where they want to make their offer. Is it a developer offering or is it an end-user offering? And then how do they do that best with the underlying cloud infrastructure that they would probably, in a sense, rent from somebody else? By the same token, the users of geospatial technology need to think about it in the same sort of way. Does it make sense to do development in the cloud? Or do we want to use software as a service as opposed to buying licenses that we have on individual desktops? Those are all the sort of questions that are flowing through all the different minds, even as they're thinking about things like security and return on investment. And the other thing we have to mention is uptime. For the cloud to work, you have to have not only do the servers themselves need to be up, but the internet, you need to have internet access to them. And just as an example, Google Mail goes down, a whole bunch of people can't work. Twitter goes down, an awful lot of people felt as though they couldn't do work. Whether they could or not is another question. There's still an awful lot of things that can go wrong. And I don't mean to suggest for a moment that those things don't go wrong if you're not living in the cloud. They just go wrong differently.
And then we've come to rely on the internet as a service that we think is always going to be up all the time and secure all the time. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that the 2009 ESRI Health GIS Conference is September 21st to the 23rd in Nashville, Tennessee. You can connect with colleagues, exchange ideas, and explore best practices for improving human health with GIS. To register, please visit www.esri.com/health-GIS. I also wanted to mention that we will have speakers and panels dedicated to cloud computing at this year's Location Intelligence Conference, October 5th to the 7th in Westminster, Colorado. Please watch in the coming days for news about registration for this year's event at www.locationintelligence.net. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can do that in several ways by writing to us at editors at directionsmag.com or leaving a message in the comment box at directionsmag or at All Points Blog. We appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast today. Join us next week and be sure to tell a friend.